European Union has not treated us well.
Stupid European elites jumping off the cliffs once again.
Yes, you are the guilty people, and you refuse to accept it.
This is EU Scream, the podcast on Europe and its political extremes. I'm James, a journalist who's crisscrossed Europe for 15 years now, covering politics and the economy.
I'm Tom. I've been a lobbyist and spin doctor in Brussels for many years, and I've spent the last decade fighting climate change.
In this episode, the emergence of uber-democratic pan-European movements and parties. Is their model of citizen participation the smart way to fight right-wing populism? We speak with Colomb Can Salvador, a co-founder of one of the most prominent among these groups, Volt Europa. We also hear from Pella Christi, an EU affairs expert with a Eurosceptic past. He says parties like Volt are going to have to make tough compromises to avoid making Europe's problems with populism even worse. So, Tom, let's say you start a political party. Let's begin with the most important question.
Yep.
What color are you going to choose?
Yeah.
Purple has been taken.
Purple is taken. Purple was taken before and it's been taken again. Yeah, I think I'm kind of going lame. I'm thinking a kind of a rusty gold lame.
No one really does chrome colors, do they?
Yeah, exactly.
No one does shiny.
Right, where's metallicized?
You know those cars from the 70s or the 80s?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
What do you call that?
You could pay like an extra 500 quid and get what they call, I believe, a metal finish, wasn't it?
It's a metal finish.
Yeah.
Yeah, why does nobody have a metal finish? Be careful what you ask for.
Yeah, good point.
Okay, I think that's enough mirth. We'll come back later with some analysis after our interview, which is with Colomb Can Salvador of Volt Europa. She's French, but it was really the vote for Brexit, not just Marine Le Pen's strong showing in the 2017 French election, that drove her to join forces with two other 20-somethings and develop a highly participative pan-European party model. Volt was founded just 18 months ago, but it already claimed some 15,000 members, so not bad going. They are pretty confident about winning seats in the European Parliament elections in May 2019. I first asked Colomb about the name of the group and why they'd gone for that purple branding.
So we chose Volt because Volt means energy. It's the same name across borders. We are now in 32 European countries. We wanted to make sure that we had one brand across the whole EU and across Europe and that our name could be easily recognized. Concerning the color, we looked, when we founded it with three people, we looked online at colors of existing parties and what was taken. Green was green. Red and blue is often very connotated. Purple was not really taken at the time. And so we tested it. It looked nice. We took it. And then our branding experts actually liked it.
How difficult is it to register as a European political party?
It's almost impossible. But I think that no party before being elected has ever been able to do it. You need to have seven political parties in seven countries with one member of the national parliament or European parliament that joins that party. And however, if you try to go about it this way, it means that you still haven't been elected in the European Parliament. And as such, it's a big bet to ask parliamentarians to, you know, leave their existing parties and come with a new entity. So it's extremely hard to do it. We are actively trying to do it because you get advantages such as broadcasting time, access to debates, but it is extremely hard to do it. Even if we had the status of a European political party, we would have to register in every single country. So in some countries, it's pretty easy. In others, like France, it takes longer because not only do you have to become an association, but then to actually be able to campaign, you need to file to become a second association with a different bank account to be able to raise funds for a campaign and so on. It is definitely a headache and one of the barriers to actually being able to do European politics.
I want to start the EU Scream political party. Where's the easiest country to go so I can do that?
It really depends on what you stand for.
I stand for peace, love, and understanding.
Nice ideas. It might be Sweden or Denmark. For example, Italy, you have to collect an insane amount of signatures. France to file, I don't know how many papers and so on. Denmark might be one of the easiest.
Right, so countries that we associate with transparency actually might make creating a political party easier than others.
Yeah.
Right, okay. So what concerns you most?
So in European elections at the moment, you have a low participation rate. And the reason for this, in my opinion, is not only that you have far-right parties that are talking about immigration or other, or dismantling the EU. It's also that Europeans don't understand how their voices will be heard in the European Union, how they can participate. So for me, it's not only pro versus anti-EU, but it will also be about an old way of doing politics versus a new way of doing politics. And it's also why I get involved. In France at the moment, I didn't see how I could get involved in a current party and where my voice would be heard, where I could vote on people representing me in the party and so on.
Right. So even if you became involved in La République En Marche, you would feel like it would just be hard to speak to anyone to get your policy ideas heard.
So we have quite a few En Marche people in the movement. And what they tell us is that often you have those consultations and so on. They're non-binding. They're not taken into account at the end of the day. It's a few people in a room making the decisions. And also it's a movement, but this is very French in itself. The political system revolves around strong figures. And this is where Volt really wants to do it in a different way and to bring about new energy. We are not men or women centered. There's not one person that is a supreme leader or that, you know, all of this evolves around. It's about the movement and the fact that we need to revolutionize politics, the future of the EU, and make sure that we actually bring new hope to people. If you show them that they have a voice, that it matters, I don't see why people wouldn't go and vote.
Okay, so Voltarian, not Jupiterian.
Volters, we say.
Yeah. Volters, okay, very good. Now, the big question for society as a whole, for media, for politics, for policymaking, just for social cohesion, is how do you break through the filter bubble? I mean, we have people on one side of the fence who are very easily persuaded by the alt-right arguments against migration, for greater law and order. And on the other side, we have this kind of liberal internationalist group that have the open outlook. Do you think that you have solved how to cross through this, you know, barrier that we seem to be seeing increasingly in our societies?
We don't have an ideology. We don't brand ourselves this way for two reasons. One, we all over Europe, and left, right, liberal, non-liberal, or whatever means completely different stuff across the EU. And second, because we use best practices. So we look at what works regardless of the spectrum, whether it's on the left, the right, or other, and we will use it to be able to craft policies. And this actually tends to resonate from people who come from different political backgrounds. So we have people who, in certain countries, for example, in Italy, we have quite a few five-star movement alumni, if I can call it this way, who came to some of our meetings and were actually convinced. They were sick of the way it was going. And they were like, oh, it actually makes sense. You know, you're not left, you're not right. You look at what works and you use it.
Okay. Most of your policies, more levies on CO2 emissions, a directly elected European president, a common asylum and immigration policy, a more global Europe. That's the sort of wish list that you could hear at European Commission headquarters. Yes, you are proof that a youthful, progressive, pan-European movement can be created from scratch, but really, what's new?
So our model of operation is new. It's never been done that you have one movement, one party under one brand from all across Europe who agree on one set of policy. So if and when we enter the European Parliament, you'll have votes, whether it's an MEP from Bulgaria, Romania, Poland, France, or other, who agree on the way forward with a united voice. We have some policies that are not currently proposed, for example, introducing citizens' assemblies in the European Union or other. But we don't pretend to reinvent the wheel, and we never did. You know, lots of things have been tried, lots of things have failed and have succeeded. So we look at what has worked. We looked at best practices.
Once you get into the European Parliament, presuming that you do, aren't you going to have to go against Volt's internal lines in order to get agreement in the group system?
we want to form an independent group in the European Parliament, so to get at least 25 members elected from 7 countries, so to be independent. Second, if we're elected to the European Parliament, we do plan to function in a different way. But we want to make sure, for example, that our members are consulted regularly. So before any decision is made, when time allows, that we go back to the movements and that people can draft position, can propose them, and that it's voted upon, so that the representatives actually represent. So that's quite innovative because it's not what is consistently being done in politics at the moment. And we're also innovating this because we are right now building a policy software which we will use from December onwards, where our members can directly submit policies. You know, we're very much about citizen empowerment, so we want citizens to participate beyond elections. And once we have elected representatives, we want people to keep on interacting with the EU.
What is the advantage of having a pan-European party that has this single party line? What is that trying to fix?
So if you look right now at the European Parliament, there's a few issues. One, when you look at existing groups, whether ALDE or EPP, no one knows what they are within national countries. Two, you have different national parties with different interests and different positions within the same group. How can you expect that change will happen or that anything will change when those groups have such different interests? It's almost impossible. Vote with one party, one vision, one set of policies set ahead of time will be able to push for the measures that it advocates for. We will all come together under one banner to make sure that this happens. We won't be having lots of internal discussions about whether, you know, a French party and an Italian one need to align on an issue. Second, when you look at the European Parliament right now, it feels very distant. Most people who are not interested in EU politics will not know what EPP means, what ALDE means. They might know the name of their national parties. They don't know it's within a group. I didn't know before I got interested in this. It sounded very weird to me. Like, wait, what is ALDE? Why do you have so many parties under it? And so on. By making the link, vote with one brand at the European level, and then we will also compete for national and local elections, you will be able to see who your representatives are, understand the link between every level. And finally, is the fact that citizens cannot participate at the moment in European politics, or at least they feel like they cannot. Because to mitigate this, you do have possibilities, such as filing a European citizen initiative, although the threshold is way too high. With Volt, we want to change this. So our members will be able to interact directly with members of the European Parliament through a new software we're actually building to make sure that they can propose policies, vote on them, and that the Volt MEPs are actually Volt MEPs, that they represent the movement, that they have to listen to people on an everyday basis. And we will go beyond this. Of course, it's not only about the movement. We will propose participation tools in the European Union, such as a platform for Europeans to be able to propose initiatives, to comment on current bills, to participate in the budget making, and so on.
So it sounds a lot like five-star direct democracy.
It's not. We don't want to take away the role of a strong government. We just want to increase citizen participation. There's a big difference between advocating for referendums every 2 days and actually understanding that a government is needed, that governments have a role to play, but that citizens should be more involved beyond every 4 or 5 years. One last example, participatory budget making. It's enabling citizens to decide on a part of the budget. So it's used in cities right now across Europe. For example, Madrid allocates a part of its budget for citizens to be able to decide what it will go to. This is possible in the European Union as well, and it doesn't mean at all direct democracy or taking away the role of the government. It just means making people active in politics.
So tell me a little bit about the members in various countries that have undergone what could be called trauma in Europe in the last few years that led these countries to become fairly Eurosceptic. I mean, what do they want to solve through Volt that has not been solved before by other political parties in these countries?
So, for example, we have one of our most active members in Greece. It's called Angelos. He's a 17-year-old high school student who's incredibly active and a brilliant policy writer, by the way. And he was telling me that when it comes to migration, for example, the way Greece is handling the migration flows is, of course, not compliant fully with human rights when you look at the fact that refugees are stuck on islands for years, which is against human rights in itself. But at the same time, how could Greece do better? You know, when other countries are not taking their fair shares of refugees, asylum seekers and migrants, and when Greece is undergoing or was undergoing such an economic crisis, how could they do better? And this is where the fact that we truly pan-European actually helps. We come together as one. So the fact that I'm French and that my current government doesn't want to accept disembarkment centers in France, as well, it wouldn't matter. We have one set of policies. So we all accept our fair share of people in Europe, which, by the way, we can completely do. It represents a minor part of the population. We all accept them as one and deal with migration flows or other issues as one to make sure that no country like Greece or even Italy is left to deal with this on their own.
And now, post-match analysis.
You get out and about. Have you spent any time with these upstart parties?
So, this was my introduction to Volt, was listening to the interview that you just did, which was pretty interesting. But I have spent a bit of time with DiEM25, which is Yanis Varoufakis's party, which is a similar sort of idea. A lot of kind of membership consultation in the production of their manifesto, another attempt at a European-wide party, which, as Colomb pointed out, you can't do, right? You can't do a... weirdly, to a veto by the UK in the last moments of their membership of the EU, vetoed the possibility of Europe-wide political parties, which felt a bit unfair to me at the time. But DiEM25 was set up with that idea in mind. And in fact, Varoufakis will actually be running for the European Parliament in 2019.
From Germany,
indeed. So I went to this DiEM25 event that Varoufakis headlined in the Beaux-Arts Concert Hall in Brussels.
Which is like the Symphony Hall.
It's the Symphony Hall, right? Designed by Victor Horta, this amazing, beautiful
building.
This
means that you could have heard Varoufakis in the most pure sonic environment. Perfect acoustics.
The acoustics were very good. There wasn't much music played. And it was Varoufakis and politicians mainly, but also some activists, and Jeff Sachs, the development economist. And they all kind of got up on stage and said a bunch of, you know, fairly sound sorts of things about the importance of environmentalism and how, you know, the world was facing potential financial meltdown, was facing a massive problem of the wealth gap. The growth of the wealth gap was a massive issue. I mean, it all kind of made sense. It was difficult to see, and in a way, I think that probably played out in Colomb's interview as well. How exactly do you deal with terrible by just being good? It was kind of appealing to the sort of people who'd buy a ticket and go to an event at the Beaux-Arts to talk about politics. It's not going to appeal to a whole section of people who wouldn't do that and didn't do that. It's unclear to me how these parties speak to essentially the piece of society that they've kind of got the problem with. And it sounds a bit like talking at cross purposes. But I do think there's a great deal of power in optimism, right? And it's super important to have optimism and to also kind of define the sunny uplands. You know, I was inspired enough to give him 25 euros.
25 euros? That's what you're supposed to give at these things?
That was just me. I can't remember what we paid for the tickets.
I mean, that's like a super good deal compared to what you would pay to go to some, you know, Bush League 2-bit congressional candidate dinner in the United States.
Oh, God, they charge like thousands.
I mean, what a night.
Yeah, no, it was fun. It was interesting. And it was, you know, it was inspiring. And listening to Colomb, she's like, yeah, I'm 24 years old and I'm setting out to change the world. That's super inspiring. Yeah. Like, it's really powerful. You know, we've got this brilliant 17-year-old kid. Yeah, tremendous, right? Like, that's brilliant. The sad reality of politics is it's really hard for that stuff to break through.
I guess I was not entirely comfortable with some of the language that she used that was a cross between a little bit management speak, a little bit McKinseyite.
She's actually focused far more on the process than she is on the... She's focused more on the means than she is on the ends.
Building a party.
Right. But the point is, at the end of the day, we have a lot of very, very serious problems. Climate change and the ecological disaster facing the Earth, right? And it's not the only problem we've got. It is not clear to me that kind of, well, you know, we're going to be super consultative and super inclusive and we're all going to have a good time and we're going to come up with a carbon tax. Like, That was a failed policy 15 years ago. Like, come on, dudes, you can do better than this. So actually, when you take the sum total or, you know, compromised position of what everybody thinks, you tend to end up with a bit of a mash, right? And you don't tend to end up with radical or really impactful policy. You don't tend to get creativity in those moments, right? Creativity happens between small groups of people, not vast groups of people. Right?
That's really interesting because, you know, you do hear within what Colomb is saying certain elements of the direct democracy fantasy.
But I mean, she kind of makes the point herself, right, during the interview. She says, but we're not saying we don't believe in government. We're not saying there's no role for leadership. There is also a role for leadership, but these people are really going to be of the movement. But then you've got to say, okay, well, what's the movement then? Is that the electorate? Or is that the people who have chosen to get involved?
I mean, you're absolutely right. She's more like flicking at this kind of hybrid between direct democracy and traditional representative government.
Well, what's your actual opinion on direct democracy?
I just think it's immensely dangerous. I mean, Facebook likes to vote on, you know, individual government policies in real time, a la Five Star. And it's what Five Star Movement wants.
Yeah.
And what you just disintermediate any government. You just kind of have mob rule rather than a government that's elected that can represent all the people. Your expectation as somebody who is involved in direct democracy is, no, this is what I want, and there will be no compromise.
And I think that mob rule point is the really important one, right? And that is the reason we have representative democracy, is because on some level we elect people on the basis that they will save us from the worst of ourselves.
Pella, hello.
Hi, James.
How you doing?
I'm fine, thanks. How are you?
Good, good, good. So you're with the Eurofex consultancy?
Yes, that is true.
In Brussels? You're on the dark side, as we like to say, and we say that only half in jest. The Eurofex website even offers companies and clients insight into how to defend the undefendable.
Well, yeah, we host events on how to defend the undefendable, or rather we host events with people who speak about how it is to defend the undefendable.
Right, 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 right. Okay. You've also been a Danish Eurosceptic with the June movement.
Indeed.
And it was during that period you wanted to put a halt to more European integration rather than tear the whole European house down. You've also worked as an advisor to a Danish member of the European Parliament who at one point had been a member of the far-right Danish People's Party.
Yes, I've worked for different Danish politicians coming from the left, coming from the right, and hailing more to the center. And yes, I worked for a former Danish People's Party MEP who left her party over their migration policy.
And I guess it's that breadth of experience that means that you can give us the long view on whether the lunatics are about to take over the asylum, you know, whether the populists and the extremists will win enough seats to cause havoc in the European Parliament after the elections in May 2019. But, you know, concerns are not exactly new, right?
No, it's nothing new. I mean, every election I've been around in, and the first election I campaigned in was 1999, there have been the scare of populists of one species or another, or Eurosceptics coming to eat them all. And actually, in 1979, the first popular elections to the European Parliament, lots of Eurosceptics were elected. A quarter of the Danish members of Parliament at the first election were Eurosceptics and wanted to leave the EU. And to my knowledge, Denmark is still there and many other countries are still there. So it's like, we hear it every time. I think Brussels has a short memory. Alessandro Mussolini was a member of the mainstream EPP group. That was some years after she founded a neo-fascist party in Italy.
Pella, what is your view on whether these brand new pro-European citizen movements and trans-European parties are a way to curb the threat from populists and extremists? One prominent example is Volt Europa, Another example is DiEM25, the Democracy in Europe movement, which is a kind of post-capitalist European Federalist Party.
Just like we've seen the threat of populists come and go, we've also seen the promise of somebody to counter them come and go. And I think all honor to them, honor and respect anyone who fights for what they believe in politics, and especially starts it up from scratch, deserve respect. That being said, I'm a little bit skeptical of their chances of success. Building a party is always hard work. It takes time, it takes human resources, it takes financial resources. And building it in several countries like Volt tries to do, that is a gargantuan project. It's interesting that they want seven or going for representative from seven member states, but they also need to hit the other mark, which is more than 25 members of parliament. Maybe even more, because parliament could very well be changing its rules. Volt, even if they hit seven countries, in order to gain influence, they will need to sell part of themselves and join another political group. That's the only way forward. And it's the same with DiEM25. I don't know how many members they might get or might not get, but again, it is a far way from having some people elected to making a group in the European Parliament.
And that's super important, because groups, once you form this group with at least 25 members of the European Parliament from seven countries, you get a lot of money.
You get a lot of money and you get a lot of influence. We're talking speaking time in the plenary, powerful position in each committee. It's the amount of staff you have. Do you have a secretariat? And then there is the money. With each MEP, there is a certain amount of money you get to do informational work. Depending on how you calculate, it's between 20 and 40,000 euros a year per MEP. So, of course, there is the money in it as well.
I mean, it's fair to say that UKIP, the British far right, UKIP, that took Britain effectively out of the European Union, nurtured itself for years and years on that kind of money. So let's circle back to the fears about the European Parliament being held hostage by these groups. Let's take that threat seriously. You say, you know, that's always been there. It's always been a concern. You know, estimates are about 10%, maybe a little bit more from the far and extreme right. That could go up a bit in a new parliament.
Well, the thing is, they will have influence if and only if a group like the EPP decides to give it to them. Because as in any parliament, you can have 10% or 12% or 15%. If nobody wants to take you into a coalition, if nobody wants to make deals with you, then there is no risk. Then you are there and you can speak your democratic mind. And if we look at the far right, many times their colleagues vote them down simply because it's the far right and they don't want to give them that. Also remember that part of that group is governing Austria with an EPP party today. And Lega Nord from Italy, or Lega as they are now, they have been in government with Berlusconi as an EPP man as well. I mean, there are also these things where we've seen them come and go, and we've had it with the Austrians before as well, and the world didn't collapse, and Parliament didn't collapse. Today, EPP and SND, the Conservatives and the Socialists, they know they have a narrow majority. What we might see in the new Parliament is the situation where the Socialists and Conservatives look at ALDE, the Greens, or whoever, and say, we need you. And to a certain extent, it's what helps govern Europe. We have changes, but they are gradual. And we change the center of gravity of our negotiations slightly.
There are groups who are sick and tired of this. And that helps explain the upstart movements like DiEM25 and Volt Europa. Both of them say that they are the answer to populism. Populism itself being a bit of a revolt against the way that the center-left and the center-right have kind of just kept things going as they are. So if they really want to stop populism, if they really want to be an answer to populism and extremism, are they right to be forming new political parties?
Well, I would say if they really want to help combat populism in the European Parliament, which is where they're running for elections, then they, funnily enough, need to be part of the game. Because the thing is, if they do like some of the populists and say, no, we will not be part of the compromise, then even more the center-left and the center-right have to go together to make workable compromises. And then you feed into the narrative of the populists, because then, yes, indeed, all of the established parties look so alike, because they have to, because if not, nothing gets done. So if they want to be part of it, the solution to populism, they need to be part of the system. And that's something they will need to decide on themselves. Do they go actively to have as much influence for their policy as possible in whatever compromise you make? Or is it more important to be principled and say what you mean? And then knowing full well that when you do that in a place like the European Parliament, you give the real power to those that negotiate the compromises. And listen, my time in Parliament, I've brokered deals between and been part of deals between ECR and GUE that included EPP and ALDE.
Or, let's just translate that. You've been part of deals involving what is effectively...
British Conservatives and former communists. That also included the German Conservatives and Dutch liberals. This is the way we did, and that's the way you negotiate, and sometimes you find the strangest bedfellows in politics. I would just say anyone running for parliament should be willing to actually use your mandate in the best way possible for what you believe. You should be at all the meetings. You should try and get influence in all negotiations. Getting influence also means sometimes giving up something of your soul. But again, that's politics. That's the debate between are you pure ideology, ideologue, or do you want things to work?
Okay, so if Vault and DiEM get seats, they are going to have to compromise to get things done.
Yes, and even if they get their hot stream come true and they manage to each make their own group, so what? If they don't work with the others, then they will just be platforms on which to speak, unless they think that they can actually have closer majority of parliament. If they get their own groups or together form a group, or maybe even together join a third group and say, okay, we make a confederal group and you'll allow us here. Well, then they can help combat populism, but that's by actively taking part in the political process and maybe also using that to expose some of those politicians that are not hardworking, because there are also hardworking populists, if we're honest. If they don't do it, well, then they become part of the problem.
That's EU Scream for this week. You can check our website at euscream.com for links to topics discussed in the show and for more episodes. Please rate us on iTunes, tweet about us at EU Screams, and like us on Facebook. You'll also find us on Instagram and LinkedIn. EU Scream is edited and mixed by me, James Cantor. Tom Brooks and I produce the show. Laura Natale plays our piano. Thanks for listening.